My name's Joey. I'm an addict. My clean date is 10, 16, 15, and I love my clean date so much. I work my recovery so hard so I don't have to have another clean date. I heard somebody in a meeting one time say that they also work their recovery so hard so that way their clean date isn't on their tombstone. And, you know, that got me thinking a lot because, is that rain? Wow. Shit just got real. You know, I'm very blessed. Thank you, Chris, for letting me be of service to come out here. I'm a two-time person here, and this place, Austin Recovery, was my first introduction into anything recovery-related. My work sent me here. I'd never been to a meeting before. I never knew about the steps. I heard about it, you know, on TV and, you know, stuff like that. So I'm just going to start off with, you know, how I got here, how I earned my seat, you know, how I'm eligible to be up here and share my story, and then my strength and my hope for you guys. I started drinking, you know, when I was 15, when my mom was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. You know, I was raised in an Air Force Base family, you know, I lived on Air Force bases, you know, it was like, we were tight, you know, at baseball, my dad was the coach, you know, this and this and this, and it was crazy, you know, I just started drinking just because I love my mom, you know, so much. I hated seeing her in pain, you know. I'll get emotional from here to there, so bear with me. You know, and at the same time that my mom was going through that, my best friend, his parents were going through a divorce, and they were always out, and his dad was always out of town, and his dad was a big drinker, so he always had a full liquor cabinet. And so what we like to do is go to school and then come back, lift weights, and just get fucked up. And that was our routine through high school. My junior year, I was playing football, and I blew out my knee. And I couldn't play sports anymore, so I started taking some business classes, and over the summer, so that way I could go to work and get credit for being at work. So by the time my friends got off and all that, you know, I'd be getting off work and I'd have money, and you know, we'd go party. I met my son's mom when I was 15, and it was just like typical 15-year-olds meeting, and, you know, it was just all about, you know, hooking up, sex. Her parents drank, you know, and they introduced me to, you know, to, like, weed. And, you know, it went fast. And, you know, it was just like that, you know, just typical teenage shit, you know, just school, work, drinking, partying, and then graduated and graduated in 99, had our son in 2000, you know, just kept partying. And then, you know, I got a call to come to Austin. I was out in Clovis, New Mexico, in a real shitty small town. It was an Air Force Base town. So I got a call to come out here and work for a law firm. You know, my son was just born. He was not even a year. And I was like, okay, this is a chance for me to get out of town, you know, and start a life for him. You know, so that way he could go to school out here in Austin and, you know, have the better things instead of a small town where there's nowhere to like, grow. So I moved out here and, you know, got my job downtown. It was, like, right at 6th and Congress, the perfect place. A huge law firm. It was, like, in the top five. You know, I had no experience. They trained me. And, you know, I started, you know, happy hours as soon as the day was over, you know. Between that and, you know, and working for 40-some attorneys, you know, all with little mini bars in every office, you know, it's just like drinking through work. So after about a year or two, I ended up moving her and my son out here. And I got my apartment, my first apartment, off of Riverside, which is, if you're looking for a first apartment, don't get your first apartment off Riverside. Because at that point, I just drank and smoked weed. I wasn't introduced to coke yet. You know, so I moved her down here, and she grew up in that small town. You know, all she knew was a small town in New Mexico. You know, our closest town was Lubbock. And And, you know, so when I moved her down here, she quickly got caught up in the Sixth Street life. You know, it was just party, party, party. And, you know, it was fun for a while, but then, you know, after a while, you know, I had to be the parent. She couldn't keep a job. And, you know, she was out all night, and, you know, and I was still working my job at the law firm. I was a functioning addict. You know, I showed up, you know, all fucked up to work, got through the day, came home, partied, you know, because I had to do the things for my son because she wasn't doing it. I had to be the parent. And, you know, that went on for a long time. And, you know, the first time I used Coke was in 2001. And it was introduced through our maintenance guy. you know, we were sitting there partying, and, you know, and I did it, you know, because I was just like, why the hell not? Something different. So I started doing it, and I couldn't stop, you know. But I always considered myself an alcoholic because I chased the bottle, and then I chased the dope. And, for a couple years, you know, like they say, if nothing changes, nothing changes, and nothing fucking changed, you know. In and out, you know. The first time I got arrested, something major was she was working at Expose and came home with a bunch of ice, and we've been up for days, and you know, and. You know, we got into this huge argument, and she called the cops, and she was just like, he's trying to kill me, and hung up the phone. And, you know, and so I went and hid out at the neighbor's house, and I had warrants, and, you know, the whole spill, you know, I ended up going to jail because of the whole situation, and my warrants. And the thing about that was that she took the blame for that, and she took the blame for all the dope, and so I just had like the pot charges and my warrants, and you know, so it just, you know, so she was doing the SMART program, and she had to do all that, and you know, and she didn't do it, and I remember one day I came home from work, and I'm sitting there, and I just heated up some corn dogs, and I hear this knock at my door. And I see somebody jump the balcony, and it was the sheriff's department looking for her, and that was the time that, you know, I started, you know, and they came and they got her because she stopped doing her deal, and that was the point that I stopped giving up on her, you know, because I couldn't do it anymore. You know, she wasn't doing her shit, she wasn't being a parent, and so we pretty much separated ways, and so. You know, long story short, she was in and out partying, and she ended up getting lupus. And, she went through a huge depression, and she kept using over it. She wasn't taking herself serious, you know, she wasn't taking it serious, you know. She was drinking, and I was drinking with her side by side when she was there. And I pretty much, you know, I watched her deteriorate, you know, in front of my eyes. You know, this is a person I met at 15 years old. This was the love of my life, the mother of my kids, you know. I sat there, you know, and I couldn't stop for her, and she couldn't stop for herself, you know. Over this time, you know, I was still being a productive parent. I was doing my son's T-ball. I was coaching for him, you know. I'd be showing up to his practices, you know, coaching these little kids, and I'd be in the bathroom doing lines or having Gatorade with vodka in it, and it was just a horrible situation that we went through, you know. And came December, December 2012, she got pretty bad really fast. She was, like I said, she was deteriorating in front of my face. You know, there's nothing I could do about it. She'd come and she'd go, and I'd be in and out of the hospitals with her, the emergency rooms, you know, sitting there listening to the doctors tell her that she can't drink, she can't do anything, she doesn't have a liver, kidneys, you know, she can't get on the thing, you know, on the donor list because she won't stop drinking. And then came a couple days, I don't know. I'm not going to say dates because I'll get them wrong. We went to Barton Creek Mall, and it was me, my sister, my son, and her. And she couldn't even walk, like, through Penny's. She had to stop and, you know, right outside of Penny's. And me and my son went to go do our thing. You know, we went to go shopping. My sister went her way. I went my way. And I came back, and I saw her. And you know, and she was just watching people, you know, carry on their daily lives. And I stood, and I remember, like, for the first time, I got emotional. Because, you know, when we're using, we don't, you know, we don't get emotional. At least I didn't, you know. And I knew something was up, and I went and talked to her, and she's just like, I'm ready to go home. And I was like, okay, well, let's go home, you know. And so we went home. You know, she slept for a couple days. It was a Friday night. I came home, of course, you know, came home with a bottle of vodka. I, you know, not that I needed a reason to drink, because we don't need a reason to use. We never do, or we never did. And I came home, and, you know, and I started drinking, and she was there. And next thing I know, you know, we're slamming shots of vodka together. And, you know, and for once, we're actually having a good civil conversation. We're having a good night. We're talking. The next day, she got really sick. Like, I woke up, and she was, like, asleep, and like, she's, like, bleeding out of her ears and her nose. And I called the ambulance, and they came and got her Sunday. And I went to, I just thought nothing was up. You know, she'd been in and out of the hospital multiple times. You know, it was just another thing. You know, it was just like, she'll go in, the doctors will put her, you know, give her some IVs and send her back on her way, because that's what they do. You know, and I went in. God told me to go in and go check on her that Monday morning before I went to work. So I went in there and I saw her. You know, and she was in ICU. And I was like, okay, you know, I talked to her. I told her I'd be there after work. Or I'd come right back straight after work. And I'm leaving, and they stopped me right in front of the elevator. And they're like, oh, thank God I caught you. And I was just like, oh, what's up? You know, not thinking anything. And they're like, you need to stay. You can't leave. She has less than 24 hours to live. And I was like, what? It was like, you know. I didn't believe it. You know, I instantly called, you know, my sister, and I called my work, and I told them, and so many emotions ran through my head. You know, what's the one thing I knew what to do to calm me down was to start drinking, and that's what I did. So, you know, I went straight, you know, I left for a couple minutes, went straight to the liquor store, bought a bottle, and I was sitting there just like drinking and just trying to figure shit out. And my sister picked up my son. And he came up there, and, you know, and like I said, she'd been in and out of the hospitals. Even he didn't even think anything. He was 12 at the time. You know, this poor kid, you know, has been through so much that that we sent him home like around 10 o'clock because it was a school night. And you know, I had to call him back. I was like, hey, you know, you need to come say bye to your mom, like, seriously. And he's like, I'll see her tomorrow. And I was like, no, dude. You know, he still didn't know. I didn't want to tell him. I didn't have it in me to tell him, you know, because I knew, you know, I just didn't tell him. I don't know. That'll come out later, you know, whatever. So he left, and, you know, we were sitting there. Oh, before that, I'm sorry, I forgot this part, because this is a huge part in my story, was during the day I got the people from South Austin Hospital came in, and they were like, we need to talk to you in the office. And I was like, okay, what's up? You know, and went in there, and I didn't know what was going on. And I guess at some point during the day, she ended up making me her medical power of attorney. And I was like, okay, so what's up? You know, what do I got to do? And they're like, well, it's your choice what to do. You know, do we keep letting her, you know, do we keep trying to keep her alive or just let her go? And I was like, well, what do you mean keeping her alive? And they're like, we're giving her blood, but it's going straight through her. You know, we're wasting blood on her. It's coming out of, like, you know, all of her parts, you know. So there's nothing we can do. So we can just make her comfortable until she passes. So as I'm signing this letter for them to do it, you know, my hand's just, like, you know, shaking. And I'm crying because, like I said, this person I met at 15 years old, the mother of my child, the person that I'd seen almost every day for like 17 years, you know, And all I could think about was 2 days before I came home with a bottle of vodka and I'm pouring her shots. And that kept me using for the longest time, you know, that blame, the what ifs, the shoulda, couldas, all that, so we're sitting there in her room and it was about 11:15, you know, she took her last breath. And we were there, that was very hard to watch as you're yelling and screaming for somebody to take one more breath, one more, come on, one more. You're praying to God. And, that night when she passed, a lot of things in me left too. You know, I became spiritually dead. I remember, I was in the chapel. And I was throwing Bibles. I was cursing him out. You know, I say that night I evicted God from my life and I brought my disease and the devil straight up to the penthouse because that's what I did. You know, I was done, you know. So the next day, you know, of course I had to tell my son. I don't even remember telling him. You know, it was just another thing. You know, I was so fucked up, you know, when I told him that I don't even remember. So, you know, so we had to go back to the for the funeral. Her family blamed me for everything. They're like, you did this. If she would have stayed here, she'd still be alive. This. As they're sitting outside the church drinking beer, they're blaming me for her death. So I left that time and spoke to her family since then, and they haven't tried to speak to me. So, you know, that's their shit, not mine, you know. Come back, you know, I try to do Christmas. Try to do New Year's, try to be a parent, try to keep my job. And I did all that, you know, but it was all a blur. I remember Jaden, my son, was telling me, he's like, yeah, you got me all these gifts, but none of them were the right size or none of them were anything that I wanted. And I was just like, you're just lucky you got gifts, dude, seriously, because I don't even remember going. And that's the truth. I mean, it's crazy. You know, I don't remember. And that's how it was for the longest time. And I remember that, everything was kind of okay for a while, you know. And then in February, right before Valentine's Day, my mom's calling me up. And she's, you know, and I'm not answering because I'm waiting for my dealer to call me. Because I'm like, if I take her call, that's going to be the same time my dealer's going to call. And I'm going to miss it. And I'm missing out on his call. Even though I could see his apartment from my window. He lived right next door. So I missed her calls that night, and I checked my message. And she was, you know, she, like I said, she'd had Hodgkin's lymphoma. She was in remission, but she got, you know, all of her pain over the years. She got addicted to Percocet and Vicodin. So she was, you know, she was out there too. And she left me a message. I checked my messages at like 2 in the morning, and she was just like, hey, I wish you would pick up the phone. I want to talk to you. I want to make sure you're okay. I love you. And I was just like, okay, I'll talk to her tomorrow. So I went on my day, and my sister's boyfriend called me, and he was like, you can't leave. Well, she ended up passing away in her sleep that night. So there's another thing that just, you know, I put my addiction in front of, you know, taking my mom's call. You know, that, there's another reason fucked me up. You know, I was gone. And, you know, after that, you know, the drinking and the using went up. And then I started losing everything, you know. First went the car. Then went the apartment. I woke up in Brackenridge Hospital with 9 staples in my head, not knowing how I got there. They just said, somebody call the ambulance, come pick you up. And the only place I knew where to go, because they let me go, and I was so fucked up, the only place I knew where to go was my work. Because they gave me a bus pass. I was still in scrubs because I didn't have any clothes. I didn't have any money. So I went to my work, and, my work called me in Monday, you know, and they were just like, hey, we'll help you get, you know, we know what you're going through. We know what's going on. And so they sent me to Austin Recovery, and it was up the one up north. And when I got here, this was my first introduction. I'd never been to a meeting before. I never worked any steps. I didn't know anything about it. And I did the 30 days, and I got out, And I stayed clean for a little bit, but I wasn't doing the deal. I wasn't doing the relapse prevention pack that they gave me. So I went back out, and then, you know, and at that point I lost my, you know, I had to sign my son over because I wasn't in a, you know, in a, any state to be a parent. So, you know, I was, you know, I lost, like I said, I lost everything. And then I came back here to the ranch in 2015. And when I came back here, my job decided that it wasn't in their best interest to keep me anymore. So when I found that out, I was here and I talked to the counselors and you know, I was kind of doing the deal. You know, I kind of was checked out at the same time. And then I found out that when I got out, I could cash in my 401k, and that was $27,000. And I was like, oh, shit. So, you know, so I kind of checked out at that moment. And I remember my counselor, she kept talking to me, and it just didn't work. I just, you know, I was just too overwhelmed with the money, just knowing that it was out there as soon as I got out there. And so I didn't last very long. I just started using right away, and then came October, the beginning of October, I was staying with my sister and my son, my son was done with me. I embarrassed him in front of all his basketball friends. You know, I was threatening all of his friends with stealing. You know, I was all fucked up, you know. And at that point, he was done with me, so my sister kicked me out. So I was living in and out of motels on I-35. And a couple days before my last day using, I was in Motel 6. And I was smoking crack with people I didn't know. People were paying the motel, sleeping with other dudes. It was just a horrible situation. So I remember I bought some crack, and I took off walking with my bottle of Skoal up I-35, and that's the last thing I remember. I woke up in Brackenridge, and they kept calling me this weird name, and I was like, why the hell y'all keep calling me that? That ain't my name. And they said, that's the name you told us. And I was like, well, how did I get here? And they're like, the ambulance came and got you. Somebody called the cops, and you were passed out at the bus stop. And your head was laying over the curb. So if that bus would have been riding the curb, it would have decapitated your head. You're very lucky that we came and got you when we did. And so I was like, you know, that was a huge, huge eye-opener for me. My sister put me up in the hotels for two more nights. And I remember I was at the hotel and it was October 16th. And I used for, And I remember I was done. You know, something else had to change. And so I stayed clean for about a month. And I tried to come back, you know, into Austin Recovery. And it was when they were in their transition. And I didn't have any insurance, so I couldn't come back. So they sent me to this little small rehab up in Belton, little faith-based rehab. And I still wasn't done with the deal. I wasn't ready to get clean, you know. I was still, you know, I needed somewhere to stay, you know. I was tired of living out of hotels, but I didn't think I was done using, you know. And my 60 days there, which was really 90 days, because like I said, I'd stayed clean for a little while, I got to leave on a pass. And I remember my son and my sister came, and we went to the mall. And all I could think about was using. You know, there was a restaurant in this mall, and it just had this big-ass margarita, and all I could think about was using, and going in there, taking some shots, and then going back and trying to find some dope, you know, because I probably could have found it, because I'm an addict, and that's what we do, you know, and I sit there, and I was getting my beard trimmed and my hair cut, and I was just looking in the mirror, and I knew something had to change. Or I was going to be in another rehab, I was going to be in another institution, or I was going to end up like my girlfriend, I was going to be dead. Because like I said, I was on a curb hanging my head over, and I could have been decapitated, you know. So I started doing the deal, I started listening, I started paying attention. You know, H&I came in, you know, and I started listening, I started getting involved, I started reading the steps with them. And when I got out, you know, one of the things I hate is when people say, you got this, because I think that's the worst freaking thing you can say to somebody in recovery is, you got this, because we don't have shit. Shit gets real once you leave these doors. You know, so take what you can get while you're in here, you know, get these tools, get that relapse prevention plan, man, get with your sponsor. When you go out for meetings, get them numbers, use them, you know, because shit got real for me real fast, you know. I remember we were coming back and all I could focus on, like, my son was there and he's telling me he was playing basketball for Travis, and he's telling me about his games and his life, and all I'm doing is just noticing all the liquor and beer signs. I'm like, whoa. And, you know, I got home, and it was late at night, and so the next morning I went to a meeting, you know, and I did what it told me to do. I did my 90-90, and you know, I was going between, like, Cherry Creek and Bolden meetings, and, you know, it just wasn't working for me, you know. I had, you know, I was doing the program, I was working the steps, I was involved, I was doing everything that they told me to do, but something was missing in my recovery. You know, I just didn't have what I needed to continue to stay clean for the longest time, you know, for the recovery that I needed. So I remember I was leaving a meeting one day, and I was on the bus, and see, a person like me, all my friends and everybody who knows me, knows that I'm like always on my phone. I've always got an extra battery. I've always got a charger. So when I'm on the bus, I'm in my music, or I'm Facebooking, or I'm doing something. But I didn't have that shit with me one day. And I was passing Old Torf. I was just leaving an AA meeting. And I was looking out the window, and I saw some addicts out there smoking cigarettes. And I was like, what are they doing? You know, I had to be nosy, you know, because I wanted to see what they're doing. They could have been there for like a freaking choir thing and you know, a bake sale. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, yeah, I don't think addicts are out there doing that shit. But I had to see what it was. And I walked in there, and it was an NA meeting. And I remember my sponsor was there and a bunch of other addicts were there. And for the first time, you know, I was sitting in that meeting, and something just clicked with me. You know, I picked up my 9-month key tag, and I was leaving because I didn't want to talk to anybody. I skated out, and some addicts grabbed me after the meeting, like, hey, you know, they gave me hugs. They were just like this and this, and keep coming back, and they wanted to know about me, and that caught my attention. And, you know, and I always share when I tell my story, I always say that God brought me to NA. My desire to stay clean keeps me coming back. Because that's what it was. God showed up in my life, and he did something for me that I couldn't do for myself, you know. And so I felt, like I said, for the first time, I felt at home. I felt what I needed in my recovery to stay clean. And if you know me, I'm huge on, you know, doing your 90-90, you know, getting involved, finding a home group, finding a sponsor. If you go to a meeting and that meeting doesn't work, go at another time, you know. Go to another meeting somewhere across town. Find what works for you. If that group isn't working, if that fellowship isn't working, find another fellowship. But just keep finding what you need to stay clean, to get that one more day clean. Because at the end of the day, that's what matters, man, is that one day clean, you know, because we're all fighting for one day, you know. And so I did. So I made my home groups clean and free. And, you know, I kept coming back, and I still wasn't, you know, totally involved, but I kept coming back, and I found myself, see, I was on probation at the time, so I had to carry around one of these breathalyzers. Looked like a drone. It was like this freaking big. And I'm very grateful for that machine, because there's a lot of times I wanted to drink, and I didn't, because I knew I'd have to blow in that machine. And so I'm very grateful for it. You know, it's part of my recovery. You know, I still miss it sometimes. I'll look at the clock. I'm like, oh, nope, don't have to do that shit no more. But I found myself coming back from Ohio, and I was in Nashville. And I was sitting there. And as soon as I walked got off that plane, my relapse played itself out like that. Like, you can call your probation officer, say the airlines lost your breathalyzer. You know, you can tell your work that you stayed in Ohio. You can, you know, all this stuff played out like that. And I found myself standing in Nashville at the bar waiting to order a shot, and they were so busy that it took a while. And like, God showed up in my life again. And, you know, and I didn't get that drink because I knew if I would have took that drink, I would have been in Nashville in the airport looking for dope. And then if I wouldn't have found it in there, I'd have been downtown Nashville looking for dope. And try to explain that shit why I need another plane ticket, you know. So I got on the plane, and I'm just thanking God. I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know. And I didn't have the numbers. I didn't have the tools that I do now, you know. I got on the plane, and I'm like, oh, thank you, God. Get me back to Austin. I'm going to do the deal. I get on the plane. The guy sitting next to me is ordering gin and tonics the whole flight home. And I'm like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. So another, you know, powerlessness right there. There's nothing I could do, you know. And, you know, so I came back to Austin, and I got more involved with my home group, with the program, with the fellowship. You know, I became of service. I got a sponsor. I got it, you know, when my home group said, hey, we want to vote you and we want to give you the key to our meeting because we rely on you to show up, you know, and open the doors and make the coffee and set it up and do all this stuff. You know, when they gave me that key, I was still living with my sister. So I didn't have a key. I didn't have a car key. I didn't have a mailbox key. I didn't have anything. But this group, my home group, trusted me to give me a key. And that was the most, that blew my mind that they trusted me. And that kept me coming back even more. That just like fueled the fire to my recovery. And I've had that service position for like almost a year and a half. I started, I'm a huge person also on H&I. You know, if you hit, you know, when you guys hit that 6 months, get a service position, get H&I, come back and carry the message, you know, so that way you guys could be up here and you guys could carry to the addicts, you know, who are still suffering, who can't make it out to meetings, you know. I still don't have a license. My son's 17 and we were just talking about it. He's probably going to be driving and have a license before I do. He made a crack at me a couple months ago. He's like, hey, are we going to take driver's ed together? And I'm like, shit, dude. But you know what the funny thing is? He's right, you know? You know? So I couldn't get mad at him for that, you know? So I'm a person that, you know, I carry my key tags on my backpack proudly. I'm a very proud member of Narcotics Anonymous. I don't hide my recovery from anybody. I don't hide the fact that I'm in recovery. I don't hide the fact that I'm in NA. And my work, you know, when people ask me, what are you up to? I said, I'm hitting a meeting tonight. Oh, what kind of meeting? Thundercloud's having meetings? I'm like, no, I'm in recovery. And then if they want to know more, I'll tell them. And you know what? About 75% of the time, they want to pick my brain and find out where meetings are, you know. Or I'll sit on the bus and people see my key tags. And I can tell you right now, I can guarantee you, I have 5 meeting schedules in my backpack right now just to offer to somebody who asks or who wants to know. You know, I'll write my name on it, give it to them. And, you know, and I pray that I see them in the meetings, you know. It's planting that seed that people don't know about, you know, because people, you know, sometimes people need somebody to get them into the meetings, you know. And if I can be that person, I would gratefully be that person. You know, like my sponsor said, I hit a meeting almost every night. Monday's H&I, Tuesday's home group, Wednesday's meeting in church, Thursdays I go to San Marcos for a meeting, Fridays I hit a meeting at 8, Saturdays I'm either traveling to speaker jams or I'm hitting meetings. Sundays I go to church and then I hit a candlelight meeting or another meeting. You know, it's recovery. You know, we went out to Caldwell yesterday for a 17th year anniversary, and a friend of mine, she was like, what do you do for fun? What do you guys do for fun? I was like, I go to meetings. And she's like, okay, I know that. What else do you do? Oh, I go to speaker functions. Okay, besides that. And I said, oh, I go to work. And she goes, you go to work? That ain't fun. And I said, today I love my job, you know, because I'm clean. I'm able to show up. I'm a functioning member of society. I pay, you know. I've shared this many times. My neighbor comes home, and I always see their doors are their locks are changed and stuff like that. And I remember those days, you know. I remember those days of not knowing when I got off work if my locks were going to be changed. Or I could tell you, I remember days my son would get out of school and he'd be like, I can't get in. The doors are locked. Go through the window. I can't. The windows are locked. Dad, I just got in. The electric's off. You know, I remember those fucking days when he'd call me and I'd say, and I, you know, I'd do those foxhole prayers. God, please. And then as soon as God showed up and everything went back, guess what? I was back to using, you know. So I'm very grateful for those days that I don't live like that anymore. You know, I'm very, very, very grateful, you know, that I do go to work and that I, you know, that I show up when times are important now. You know, I'm on the NA convention committee and I'm getting able to travel. You know, like I said, we were in Caldwell yesterday. I go to San Antonio. I go to Dallas. You know, I was just in San Angelo for a convention. And when I celebrated 2 years, my home group threw a big thing for me. You know, my sponsor gave me a medallion, a cake. My work gave me a cake. I was like, thanks, guys. And they're like, well, we don't have too many people in recovery. So, you know, it's, you know. So that all those things meant so much to me, you know. And then I go to San Antonio. To celebrate, me and another addict have the same clean day. And he's from San Antonio, and we go to a meeting out there. And I just expected to just to pick up, you know, a little key tag. And this home group that I had no idea, they brought out a cake for me, you know. They had a medallion for me. You know, that things like that keep me coming back, you know. The love that I experience in the fellowship of NA is just so overwhelming, you know. Even if you want to come into a meeting and you sit there and you don't want to share, you just need to be in a meeting, somebody comes up to you and gives you a hug, you know, and you try to get out of it and you just can't, you know. And it's just, and those hugs, you know, sometimes, you know, those hugs just keep you clean, you know. That's all somebody needs is the hug, you know. So the thing about that, the situation in San Antonio is when they were doing that, I remember the days. Okay. So I love the Facebook memories. People hate that shit. But I love them because it reminds me of where I used to be. So like a week before my clean date, one of the memories popped up and my sister was like, hey, if you've seen my brother, please tell him to contact me or you know, or tell him to get a hold of me. There was like maybe 2 likes and no comments, you know? And then so like I'm sitting in San Antonio and it's just amazing like how like I know so many people now, you know, because in my using I was isolated. I went to work, liquor store, and then home, you know? Because my dealer, like I said, he lived right across, you know? So I didn't have to travel for my dope, you know? I didn't have to do that, you know? I got home today and I got a little long-haired chihuahua and her name's Fluffy and she's like 12 years old. And I remember when my sister cut me off from my funds and she'd go to work and she'd take my son to work. I remember I'd like get dressed up and I'd take her out and like I'd ask people for money, change. I'd be like, hey, I got to feed my dog. And you know, people would give me money for that. And so I told her today, I said, hey, I'm sorry for kind of pimping you out my active addiction. And you know, and she just licks me because it's like, oh, you know. So, yeah, you know. So it's funny that I can look back on these things and, like, I'm grateful now where I'm at today that I don't have to live like that anymore. You know, yesterday we were driving back. We were passing a liquor store. And I look back and I'm glad. I'm grateful. You know, I always find things I'm grateful for, you know. And I was grateful last night that I'm not on the liquor store time anymore. You know, I used to be, you know, I'd be there before they opened up. I'd always make sure I was there by 9 o'clock. You know, I knew what day's this. And I'm grateful I don't live like that anymore because it's not a good way to live, you know. So when you get out of here, you know, my advice, hit meetings, you know, before you go see your kids, hit meetings, you know, and then hit another meeting. And then grab your kids and hit a meeting. And if somebody has a problem with you bringing your kids in a meeting, tell them to call their sponsor. Tell them to work some steps. Because you know what? Your recovery is just as important. Because with those kids, you need your recovery. You know, we have a good friend, and he hauls his kids everywhere he goes. You know, to meetings, and he doesn't get, you know, and that's something I respect about him. You know, because he's got 5 years clean. He's doing the deal, and you know, so. Don't use that as an excuse not to hit a meeting, you know, because you're there for your recovery. You know, if they have a problem, they can go to another meeting or they can do something else, you know, or whatever. But you're there for your recovery because at the end of the day, you're the most important person in your recovery, you know, because you need those tools in the meetings to go out there after the meeting. You know, you're in the meeting for an hour and a half, and you're safe. But once you get out there and you're on that bus or you're at home and you're lonely, and, you know, and there ain't nothing to do, you know, you start getting your feelings and your disease starts running crazy, you need those tools, you know. And where do you get those tools? You get them in meetings. Where do you get your recovery support group? In those meetings, you know. So meetings are the foundation of your recovery, you know. Like I said, man, I'm a meeting maker. I believe that shit, you know, because, you know, I go to meetings on days that I don't want to go. I go to meetings on days that I want to go. I go to meetings just to go to meetings, you know, because it's something to do. Because like I said, that's my life, you know, because I don't live that life anymore. You know, I'm able to go to places now. You know, a couple weeks ago, I went to midget wrestling, you know, and it was in a place that I used to drink. And I don't recommend you do that when you get out here. Trust me. But because I was in a good state in my recovery, I was able to go there. You know, I checked in with my sponsor. I prayed on it. I was in a good spot that day because if I would have had a bad day at work or if I wouldn't have been in a good place, I wouldn't have been able to go and do that. You know, recovery has given me my life back, you know, because for 15, 20 years, like I said, I went to work, I went to the liquor store, and I went home, you know, and that's all I did. I isolated. I remember one night, I was sitting there, and I was, and it was like 2 or 3 in the morning. One of those rehab commercials came on, and I had a bottle of Skull in my lap, and I had a plate of dope, and I was just wishing I was in rehab, you know, instead of there, you know. I wish I was clean, you know, and you know that's the things that I remember, the pain I remember. I remember those days, and that's why I can't pick up no matter what. Because today I love who I am. You know, when I hit 2 years, an addict texted me and he goes, "What's your secret? How'd you do it?" And I was all love, man. And he goes, "What do you mean?" He's like, "I thought it was don't pick up no matter what." And I said, "Yeah, but I also did that. You know, I also did those days of not picking up no matter what. But when I started loving myself, whenever I came into the meetings and NA loved me until I loved myself, that's whenever shit got, you know, it got clear, because today I love myself, you know, not to put myself in that position anymore, not to, you know, put my son through that position, not to, you know, I've done more in 2 years clean than I did in freaking 20 years, you know. I'm happy today, you know. I'm going to go home tonight, I'm going to do my prayers, I'm going to put my head on my pillow, and I'm going to be back at it tomorrow. I'm going to be back at work, I'm going to be doing H&I, I'm going to hit a meeting after that, you know. And it's just all the things that you know that recovery has given me, you know, and it wasn't until I brought my higher power back into it, you know, that was the biggest thing that was missing out of my life was the God part, because I, like I said, I evicted him from my life. When I brought him back into my life, that's when things started working, you know. In the meetings, you hear people say, stick around, don't leave before the miracles happen. You know, I used to say, what the fuck does that mean? You know, I thought it was just for today's program. Why am I thinking about, you know, sticking around, you know, and waiting for these things to happen? And at 18 months, the miracles started happening. You know, I hit a year on probation without fucking up. I didn't miss any of those breathalyzers. I didn't blow dirty in them. I didn't mess up a UA. You know, I was almost a year in my job. You know, I had my apartment, my first apartment in 5 years. I got denied 3 times before I got an apartment because of my criminal history. every time I got denied and I gave them my application fees, they took my money and probably like flipped me off as they, you know. But every time I got denied, I felt more like a failure. I felt more of a disappointment because my son was still going to have to live with my sister. I was going to have to, you know, figure some shit out, you know. But instead of doing what I'm used to doing, and that's picking up to get those thoughts away, called my sponsor. I went to a meeting, you know. I did what I was told to do, and, you know, and I'm here today, you know, because you're worth it, man. You know, you're in here, you're getting the tools, man. Take advantage of it, man. And when you get out there, man, hit your recovery, man, as hard as you can. Because like I said, this is my life. This is what I do for fun. Because without this shit, I don't have any of that other shit out there. You know, I'm not a father. I'm not I'm not an employee. I'm not, you know, whatever else, you know. And that's the main thing. And I'm huge, you know, and like I said, I'm huge on finding what works for you, because everybody's recovery is different. Everybody's story is different. You know, I like I said, I'm more of an alcoholic. I chase the bottle before I chase the dope, but I find what I need in Narcotics Anonymous, and that's where I stick. That's where I stay. That's where I belong. That's who loves me at the end of the day. You know, I had some situation with my blood family. You know, they drained me spiritually on Thanksgiving night. You know, for the first time, my family threatened my recovery. And not in a way where I wanted to pick up and use, but spiritually. Because I told them, I was like, hey, I hit 2 years clean. Nothing. I'm speaking at a convention in San Antonio. Nothing. I felt like shit. Some addicts picked me up that night. We went out to San Marcos. And I was in a meeting. People were there. They loved me. They hugged me. You know, it's just, that's what I need, you know. So, you know, your family's there and all that stuff, and that's good. But hit a meeting. And like I said, if that meeting doesn't work, hit another meeting. Hit another meeting. Go to a different fellowship. Find that fellowship. Try that one out. If that doesn't work, go to another one. Find out what suits you best, you know. Because at the end of the day, it's your recovery. No matter whatever anybody else says, you know, you have to do what's right for you. And, you know, it's all the time, right? Yeah, sorry. I went over. I could talk forever. That's how passionate I am about recovery. So, thanks.